Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a sustainability presentation from April 2017. Mr. Sam DeKocnik, Marketing and Sales Manager, OWS, presents Bio End of Life of Textiles.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a very strict time management, apparently. I have the impression a lot of people already knew the previous speaker, and I'm probably a completely new face to you. That's normal, because normally I present at conferences on bioplastics, compostable packaging, food service ware, compostable products in general. And today I will be talking about bio end of life of textiles and packaging for textiles. So my name is Sam DeKocnik. I work as a marketing and sales manager at OWS. For today I have two topics to cover only, and this is immediately, I would say, one of the take-home messages of my presentation, is that we need to make a distinction between managed end-of-life and in situ biodegradation. Managed end-of-life, as the term itself says, is a managed way of disposal of products under controlled conditions. Think about, if you look at bio end-of-life, think about composting, where organic waste is separately collected, managed, controlled, and composted. Think about home composting, which is the same thing but on household level. And in situ biodegradation is where materials end up in the environment in an uncontrolled way, where it is not the intention that it will end up in the environment, but it does end up, and ideally they are biodegradable. Think about when you wash clothes, there are small fragments which end up in the wastewater streams. Think about when abrasion takes place and pieces of textiles end up in soil. This is in situ biodegradation, in an uncontrolled way that materials end up in the soil or in the environment. But let me start first by introducing my company, probably a new company for you, so you understand a bit what we do, where the experience is coming from. We are a Belgium-based company, relatively young. And we have about 80 employees in total, divided over two big divisions. We have our head office in Ghent, which is about 1 hour north of Brussels, a very nice city. And we have a partner in the US as well, in Japan, and a daughter company in the US. Now, as mentioned, we have two big departments. And our core business is actually an engineering department, which has all to do with organic waste treatment. And we are designing, we are constructing large-scale anaerobic digestion plants. So this really does not have anything to do with today. This is our core business. So we design large-scale treatment plants where they treat organic waste, convert that under anaerobic conditions, so without oxygen, convert it to biogas, which can then be converted to electricity or put on the grid. So that's the core business. I'm not here for that today. I am here for the other department where I'm working. And that's a lab consulting department where, amongst other aspects, we are specialized in biodegradability, compostability, and ecotoxicity testing. So we are a testing laboratory with quite some experience in the field. So we are relatively young, but we have been there as of the very beginning, end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, when we did the very first biodegradation test on biodegradable materials. We like to refer to ourselves as a one-stop laboratory because we have about, in our facility, we have about 1,200 test reactors for biodegradation testing in soil, in fresh water, in compost, in landfill conditions, anaerobic conditions, marine conditions. We are strictly independent, so we don't produce or develop any products. It's too important in this business. And because of that, you have already seen, maybe for those who have seen the flyer, there exist several certifications for different biodegradation characteristics in different environments. We are recognized by all of these certification bureaus worldwide. So our customers go with our test reports to Australia, to Japan, to the US, to Germany, then Europe, and obtain certification. So we have just a number here. We have about 3,000 samples tested in the last years, and you will see that it covers different types of materials. Some suppliers you might know, but as mentioned, the majority are like consumer good products like films and bags, food service ware, the whole value chain. This is just a very short reference list. What is important as well, and there's an anecdote a bit further in the presentation as well, is that we are very active in standardization as well. So we participate on European level, on international level, on US level, participating in standardization committees where we develop the correct test methods, the correct specifications and criteria, how to test biodegradation, how to claim biodegradation. And as you can see here, we are also a member of ISO TC38, which is on textiles, and specifically in Work Group 30, which is on tests for biodegradability of textile materials. So we participate there as well. Now, I'll start with managed end of life, which is probably more related to the packaging for textile materials and less to the textiles themselves. That's probably more in situ biodegradation, but that I have kept for the end of the presentation. Because industrial compostability, there are a lot of basics which are being explained in this first part to understand the last part as well. Now, what is compostability? Because I think I was just a bit late for the very first presentation. There are a lot of misconceptions. And there's, for instance, there's a big difference between biodegradation and compostability. Both are not the same. As you can see here, compostability actually encompasses four aspects. You have two aspects which are linked to environmental safety, which is the heavy metal content of a material, which has also covered the ecotoxicity effects on plant growth. This is not the mother compounds, but this is the degradation products which can occur in compost after or during the production, during the degradation process. And then you have two aspects which are linked to degradation, where you need to make a distinction between disintegration, which is the fragmentation of your material. So this is the physically falling apart of your material. And then you have biodegradation, which is the conversion of your, let's say, powder to carbon dioxide and to water. So the both are not the same. You have fragmentation, where in some cases you look at mass loss. And then you have biodegradation, where the only correct parameter is the production of carbon dioxide. Which means actually, as you can see, biodegradation is one part of the whole picture of compostability. This means, and this is the second take-home message, this means that a compostable product is always biodegradable, but a biodegradable product is not always compostable, because that has to do with toxicity aspect, this has to do with thicknesses, with grammages, and this is linked to the specific standards. Which standards are available? Maybe what I guess you all know this, but I'll prefer repeating this every time again, that you need to make a distinction as well between standard specifications, which you see here, and test methods. A test method explains how, for instance, a biodegradation test needs to be performed, under which conditions, which temperature, moisture content, how the biodegradation needs to be measured. That's a test method. These references are test specifications, where they refer for the different aspects to specific test methods, and also include pass-fail criteria. So you cannot comply, or a material or product cannot comply with a test method. You can only comply with the test specification, because that's the only, let's say, form of document where you have pass-fail criteria. Okay? And as you can see, you have different standards available for industrial compostability. This one you have already seen today. You have equivalents in the US, Australia, on ISO level, which is international level as well. Luckily, I would say 95% of the content of the different standards is the same. There are some small, minor differences, but luckily, it's more or less the same. Now, if we walk through the different aspects of compostability, the first one is heavy metal content. And if you look at, let's say, the materials used in textiles and organic materials like cotton, like wool, These natural materials normally do not contain elevated heavy metals. This is not an issue. However, if you start dyeing your materials, if you start printing materials, then you need to watch out, because every pigment contains heavy metals. And this is also what happened in the very beginning of this bio industry, this bioplastic, biodegradable products industry. A lot of people wanted to promote green products, and they started printing the materials in very green colors and with dye master batches. But they were actually just adding heavy metals. They were adding copper, they were adding molybdenum, which would end up in the compost and in the soil. So you need to watch out with the use of colors in products. If we look at biodegradation, and as already mentioned, biodegradation is a part of compostability. This is very important, and this is what you need to remember of the presentation today. Biodegradation is mineralization, which means that your product, polymer or natural material, is biodegraded completely down to carbon dioxide and water. That is the only correct parameter to quantify biodegradation. If you look at literature, people refer also to, let's say, the growth of microorganisms on textile materials. They look at fragmentation, they look at drop in molecular weight. This is not proof of biodegradation. This is very important. That's not proof of biodegradation. That is proof of some sort of degradation of biological activity. It's not proof of biodegradation. That's important to remember. Now, how for industrial compostability, how is this tested? This is the test method used. And what is important, and this is the anecdote I wanted to mention here, the testing is done in line with ISO 14855, which is a test method for biodegradation in compost. And you're not allowed to do any pretreatment, also not for textiles. Why? Because in this test method, we are mimicking real-life conditions. We are mimicking industrial composting conditions. So earlier this year, I attended this ISO TC 38 meeting in Seoul, in Korea, where they were discussing a new test method which they wanted to put on the market for the testing of textiles under composting conditions. Yet they included a pretreatment which would allow to literally cook textile for as long as you want at 90, 100 degrees C, which would actually result in a hydrolysate of your textile materials, and then do a composting test. From a, let's say, a real-life perspective, this is not representative, because you will never in reality see that the material first goes to cooking process before it goes to a composting plant. So there, just to point out that standardization is also a very important tool, because it represents the test methods and that they need to be representative when claims are being made. What else? Okay, here this is, because we have been talking, also the previous presenter has been talking about cotton and wool and other natural materials. Materials, as she said, materials of natural origin, which have not been chemically modified, are accepted as being biodegradable without the need to prove it through testing. That is how it is written in the standard for industrial compostability. So if you have a natural cotton and it does not go through chemical process, it's considered biodegradable. It comes from nature and it will end up in nature again. It will biodegrade. Okay, this shows how testing is being done. So it's lab scale testing where we monitor the headspace where carbon dioxide is being collected, and then we measure the amount which is produced. So it's actually a comparative test, which needs to be validated, of course. And you always have, let's say, this is a bit technical maybe, but you have a test reactor with just the compost. There's always some carbon dioxide which is coming from the compost itself. This is called the blank. Then you have for validation, you have a positive reference, which is the same compost with cellulose. This is how the test methods prescribe it. And then you have a third series in this comparative setup, where you have your textile material or another material where you do exactly the same thing. And in the end, you measure the percentage of biodegradation by looking at the carbon dioxide production and by deducting what is coming from the compost itself. Disintegration, as mentioned, disintegration is the physically falling apart, so the degradation on the physical level, while biodegradation was the degradation on a chemical level. So if we test biodegradation, chemical composition is important. So what we do is we mill the material, even if it's a textile product or if it's a cup, we are interested in the chemical composition. So we mill the material and test it as such. If you look at fragmentation, that is obviously linked to the final product. We have, as mentioned in the beginning, the majority of the products we test are, let's say, food service ware and bags and things like that. We have been testing shirts and trousers as well, but I would say it's a marginal amount of the testing we have done. And then you need to test the final clothing as how it is being used and how it would enter or how it would be disposed of. And this is being done in a pilot scale test. So we use, I have a picture. I don't know if you see it quite well, but we use big 200 liter composting bins. We collect organic waste from a composting plant nearby. We add the product for testing to the composting bin. And then during 3 months, we will have this composted. And we will take out samples every week to see how it fragments. So this is, for instance, at start. Then we take out samples for pictures after 1 week, after 2 weeks, after 3 weeks. And this is what you see as well with, I think this is a non-woven material, 44 micron, where you see that at start, okay, obviously this is not yet biodegraded, after 1 week of composting, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and you see how this fragments or disintegrates over time. And obviously this has all to do with thickness, with grammage, with density. The thicker the material, the higher the density, the higher the grammage, the more difficult it will be to fragment sufficiently within the foreseen time frame. And then finally, what we will do, because this is actually a, let's say, a quite labor-intensive test, we know exactly how much material we add to a composting bin, and at the end we will sift the whole content of the bin, and then every piece of material which remains on the sieve is hand-picked with tweezers and to make a mass balance. So we know exactly how much has fallen through the sieve and how much has remained on the sieve. And the standard says that 90% of the weight needs to fall through that sieve. So it's very, very severe criteria. And then last aspect of industrial compostability is ecotoxicity testing. So you need two plant species. You actually have a choice between different, but you need to honor the groups where the plants are coming from. So we use a barley, and we use cress plants, and we compare actually the plant growth and the germination of the seeds with the same growth and germination of the seeds in a compost where only organic waste was composted. So we will actually check whether there's any negative effect on plant growth, on germination, by the degradation of your material on the compost, and compare that with pure compost. And as you can see, in some cases, if you have indeed a compostable material, you can have a fertilizing effect, because you add a material which is biodegradable, which is compostable, it's organic carbon, the microorganisms will like it, and the plants will like it, and they will grow even better. Maybe one small remark as well. Somehow the Australian market prefers doing a bit differently. So besides plant toxicity there, you need to do earthworm toxicity as well. But that's only for the Australian and New Zealand market. So this is in short what industrial compostability is. And this is in short what the different standards prescribe. But what these standards do not explain is how specific products need to be tested. Think about clothing, how clothing needs to be tested. Think about other materials, because one of the hot products, it has nothing to do with textiles today, but one of the hot products we are testing is coffee cups. Every week we are testing at least one or two coffee cups which can be composted. And the standard does not explain how does it need to be tested. Does it need to be tested with coffee inside, without coffee? So this is not explained by the standard. But this is explained by so-called bylaws, which have been developed by the different certification bureaus. And again, if I refer to the flyer, you will see some logos from VanSot. VanSot is a Belgium certification bureau, and they have a certification committee. In Germany, you have DinCertCo. I guess the German people will know DinCertCo from the TUV group. And then you have similar certification bureaus in Korea and Japan and Australia and the US. They all have certification committees, and we are a member of all these committees. So this is where, besides standardization, this is also quite an important task. I explained the difference between compostability, I explained the difference between biodegradability. But what is important is that in Belgium and in California, and maybe it will be a precedent because the philosophy behind it is good, you are not allowed to claim biodegradable on a product. Because the consumer could think, okay, this is biodegradable, I'll just throw it away. I can litter. Biodegradation is another key message. Biodegradation should not be a license to litter. All right? Biodegradation is not giving you permission to litter a material. So that's why there's a royal decree in Belgium and also legislation in California stating that you can only claim compostability. You're not allowed to claim biodegradability on a product. Okay. This is the theory. If you move that to the practical side, then you end up with certification logos for industrial, I'm still at industrial compostable materials. These are the most important ones in Europe. So this is one which is where the DinCertCo group is working with. This is the one in your flyer, OK Compost. And obviously, like in every ecosystem and eco level, you have many more logos, all exactly saying the same thing. This is the logo for the US, Japan, Australia, Germany, Italy, Canada, and so forth and so forth. As mentioned, they all refer to more or less the same standard with the same content. However, the big difference is that there is a geographical value. If you look at Germany, if you look at the Netherlands, if you look at Austria, Switzerland, the consumers on the street will recognize this logo. But it's based on EN13432. If you look at France, Italy, Belgium, Spain, those consumers will know the OK Compost logo. But also here it's based on EN13432. So on a B2B level, both logos have exactly the same value. On a B2C level, there's a difference. So consumers with a worldwide market, they have to apply for several logos and use the logo in the region they are selling products. So this is industrial compostability. It's the major part, I would say, of the presentation, and contains the basis understanding of what biodegradability is and compostability. Now, home composting is also a managed way of treating materials. And the main difference there is obviously temperature. And temperature can play a very important role when it comes to biodegrading materials. In industrial composting, temperatures can automatically increase to 60, 65, 70 degrees C. And this is just the work of the microorganism starting to degrade the organic waste. And there's a lot of heat production. If you look at home composting, this is, let's say, small volumes. The heat production is less big compared to industrial composting. And depends also on how well it's managed. A lot of people think they're home composting. They're actually home landfilling. They throw it on a heap and they say, I'm home composting. But if you don't manage it, if you don't turn it, if you don't add water, you're not home composting. And that makes a big difference. Now, an important legislation here is, and this has nothing to do with textiles, but maybe with the shopper bags, with the shopper bags used to in the shops, is that in France, as of now, all bags need to be mandatory home compostable and partially bio-based. And this will be extended to all food service ware items by 2020. All right? In addition, most recently, Europe has decided to specifically require the European Parliament to, let's say, develop a standard for home compostable products. For bags in first step, afterwards the standard will probably be, let's say, enlarged to other products as well. Now, as mentioned, the main difference between industrial and home compostability is temperature. And you remember, for industrial compostability, to monitor that, you had heavy metals, plant toxicity, biodegradation, disintegration. If you want to show material is home compostable as well, you have to show that it is biodegradable and fragments at ambient temperature as well. A perfect example is, for instance, PLA, which probably a lot of you already know, polylactic acid, and which is often used in textiles as well. PLA composts very well at elevated temperature. It does not compost at home composting conditions because temperature is not high enough. PLA has a glass transition temperature about 50-55 degrees C, and if that temperature is not reached, it will not hydrolyze and it will not biodegrade. So PLA, well, you can put it in soil and it will remain there, but if it's industry composted, it will biodegrade very, very quickly. Obviously, there are some certificates here as well. Okay, these are the same logos which you have in the flyer as well, from Vansot. This is for UK, this is for Germany, this is for Australia. As mentioned again, we are recognized by the different bureaus, so you should be able to get with our test reports to get these certificates. This is what I explained already. Now, we talk about industrial composting because the majority of materials are currently, let's say, the majority of the organic waste today is composted. But where is the industry going? The industry is actually going not to composting, it's going to anaerobic digestion. So a lot of composting plants today, they are looking at expanding capacity. More and more systems are being set up to separately collect organic waste and eventually also compostable products, but the capacity is not there to manage everything. So the composting plants are looking at expanding capacity. They're not doing so by expanding composting capacity. They're expanding the capacity by installing an anaerobic digestion plant in front of the composting plant, which means that all organic waste and compostable materials would first go to anaerobic digestion and then go to a post-composting stage. And this makes, from a biological point of view, a big difference for the biodegradation of products. Because as mentioned, composting is an aerobic process in the presence of oxygen, high temperature, and a lot of heat. Anaerobic digestion, there's no oxygen. You have different temperatures, but there's mainly less heat, but there's mainly biogas production. And the added value for plant manager is that this biogas can be, as mentioned in the beginning, converted to energy and under the form of gas or under the form of electricity. I will not go too much in detail, so those who would be interested, I can give much more details there, but while composting is relatively simple, and once you have, let's say, went through the testing, you can claim it's compostable, it should work in all composting plants worldwide. Anaerobic digestion is much more complex. I'm not sure whether I have a diaphragm. No, okay. It's much more complex because you can do it at different temperatures. You can do it in what we call a kind of wet conditions, like a soup. You can do it in dry conditions, which like toothpaste. You can do it in one or two reactors, and all these can be combined. So you don't have one set of conditions, which means that if you want to prove that something works in these conditions or biodegrades in these conditions, you need quite some testing. So there's a lot of development going on there. Last part of the presentation, and probably the most interesting, I assume, for textiles, because this actually covers or would cover the environments in which you have the uncontrolled disposal of materials. So the in situ biodegradation. Think about the leakage, as I call it, the leakage of plastics or textile materials due to abrasion, due to wearing, which will unavoidably end up in the environment. And as mentioned in the beginning, biodegradation is not just a simple term. It's the conversion of organic carbon to carbon dioxide, and it depends on the different environmental conditions. So if you claim, if you say something on biodegradation, not in Belgium and in California, there, as mentioned, it's not allowed to put it on packaging, but if you claim something on biodegradation, make sure you link it to an environment. Some products biodegrade only, like the PLA, at high temperature in compost, and not in all the other environments. Others biodegrade in compost and soil, but not in water. So it's very important, if you say, my product is biodegradable, it does not mean anything. My product is biodegradable in soil, or my product is biodegradable in water, fresh water and seawater. That's how it should be communicated. This is what I already mentioned. So even though the material is biodegradable, this should not mean that it can be littered, of course. Now, if you compare the different environments, there is a, let's say, a kind of order of aggressiveness. Compost, which what I have covered also so far, is the most aggressive one. Water and the oceans actually are the least, and landfill, the least aggressive. And there are two reasons for that. First of all, you have ambient temperature in the most environments and elevated temperature in compost. And as mentioned already, the higher the temperature, the faster it will biodegrade. Secondly, and this is biology, bacteria you have everywhere. Fungi, which are like mushrooms, you only have in compost and in soil. And a lot of natural materials and a lot of difficult to biodegrade polymers will be biodegraded by fungi, not by bacteria. Bacteria are quite lazy. They eat like the sugar type materials. And fungi are like, let's say, the supermans amongst the microorganisms, and they do the heavy work. If you take this into account, you can say that if my material biodegrades in seawater, you're 100% sure that it will also biodegrade in freshwater, in soil, and in compost. The other way around is not applicable. If you have proved that a product is biodegradable in soil, it does not automatically mean that it will also be biodegradable in water. This is very important to remember. Let me think. So for biodegradation in soil, some legislation. So there will be a new, let's say, European regulation, which will be put in place at the end of this year, which states that, here are just some examples, all products which are being used in soil will need to be biodegradable in soil as well. Think about mulching films, so agricultural films, but also coatings of fertilizer, body bags, other materials which are plant pots intentionally used in soil and will end up in soil. By law, they will need to be biodegradable in soil as of the end of this year. So what has happened? There's a standard which has been developed where we participated as well. This is still draft, as mentioned. And you will need to prove that the product, that the organic carbon of your product biodegrades for 90% to carbon dioxide within 2 years. Under those conditions, the product is considered biodegradable in soil. Obviously, if you look at the soil environment, there are more aspects which play a role. You have heavy metals, which need to be covered and which are the same which I already showed. And then you have also the effect on plant toxicity, which needs to be shown as well, that there are no toxic effect on plant growth and germination. This is what is covered by another logo you see in the leaflet, the OK biodegradable soil logo. If you go back to that standard, which is under development, there is more toxicity testing, because one of the situations, one of the, let's say, the issues which are currently under discussion is that, is plant toxicity testing sufficient to cover the toxicity aspect in the environment? And it was considered that this is not the case, and they also require in this new regulation to perform also toxicity tests with earthworms and with microorganisms. So this, let's say, environmental safety aspect is fully covered. Finally, marine conditions. This is I guess a few of you have already heard about the Ellen MacArthur Foundation and the report they published earlier this year. Just, I like this quote, and to show that this is definitely something to think about. So there's a small error I noticed. So that by 2025, there will be 1 ton of plastic in the ocean for every 3 tons of fish. And if we continue like this, by 2050, by weight, there will be more plastics in the ocean than fish. This is something to remember, and this is we need to do something, that's for sure. What I want to explain here with this picture is that biodegradation in the marine environment is not something very easy. You have different environmental conditions. You have the shore region, you have the free water zone, you have the bottom of the sea, and there are obviously different conditions. You have higher, lower oxygen conditions, you have the UV light which can play a role, you have marine or fungi at the bottom of the sea, which can help the biodegradation of materials. And what is also important, that should not have happened. Okay, what is also important is that materials fouling will occur. So what will happen? Microorganisms will start to grow on the materials, on the plastic fragments, and they will, in the end, all sink to the bottom of the ocean. That's what they call fouling. If you look at what is available today to prove that a material biodegrades in marine conditions, you have test methods. This is what we run as well. We have a kind of an agreement with the Sea Life Center, which is at the Belgium coast. So you have a deep sea line, a deep sea pipe, where we take deep sea water, mix that with surface water, and then test the biodegradation of the material. But you have certification as well. And this is the OK Biodegradable Marine logo, where you can see the different requirements. So again, you need to show that there are no heavy metals. You need to show that obviously it's biodegradable in seawater, not freshwater, there's a difference, not soil, not compost, where you need to show it's 90% biodegraded within 6 months. There's aquatic toxicity testing, and importantly, you need to show that obviously it will fragment in sea, and it will disintegrate in sea. And what is also important here on this logo, which is different from the other logos, you cannot put it on a product. That's important to understand. You cannot put the logo on a product because, again, the consumer could think, okay, this is okay biodegradable in the marine environment. I'll just throw it in the sea. That's where it needs to end up. This is not the case. As I already mentioned, you can obtain a certificate for the product for the material where the product is made of, but not you cannot show the logo on the final product. So this is, I think it's probably the last one of last slides. This is an overview with some examples of materials which biodegrade on different conditions. As mentioned, PLA, which is often used in textiles. You will see it's mentioned here at conditions at high temperature, not at low temperature. You do not see PLA there. And then you will see the effect of fungi on natural materials. For instance, cotton and wool would be here, because cotton and wool would need the activity of fungi to degrade or biodegrade quickly enough. And I would like to end with this. I'm sure a lot of people have already heard about oxo-degradable additives as well. We have done a desk study in 2013-14 for Plastics Europe, looking at literature, what is available on the when it comes to the biodegradation of products which are additivated with these oxo-degradable additives. So these are inorganic additives which you can add to conventional plastics like PE, like PET, like PP, and which said that it will render that that conventional plastic biodegradable. So I have run through all, let's say, literature data which is available. Conclusion was that these products are definitely not compostable, and that probably, most probably, are not biodegradable either. I have found one report where there was proof of biodegradation based on carbon dioxide production, but all the others showed no biodegradation, even though the majority claims they are biodegradable. Because they use other parameters to show it is biodegradable, they look at, as mentioned in the beginning, molecular weight drop, microbial growth, differences in chemical structure. This is proof of degradation. This is proof of, let's say, biological activity. It's not proof of biodegradation. It's very important to understand. So I'll leave you with this, and I'm open to any questions you might have. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to performancedays.com. Copyright April 2017 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.